This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. It's Friday in the summertime. The sun is out. Depending on your job, you've probably already put in 32 hours this week. Maybe you're already over 40. On a day like today, as you settle into your routine, you may find yourself asking, why can't the weekend be one day longer? It's a great question. Why exactly do we work 5 days each week? Could we just get the work done in four? You aren't alone in asking this question. All the way back in the late 1920s, John Maynard Keynes predicted that our standard of living would increase so much in a century that by 2030 or so, we'd all be working 15-hour weeks. And we're not quite there yet. So why is it we seem like we're working more than ever? Why are some politicians like Jeb Bush saying we might need to work even longer hours? Today, Where We Live, we'll take this lovely sun-splashed Friday and shamelessly wonder along with you. Why not shorten the work week? Are you happy with your 5-day work schedule? Would you be more productive if your weeks were shorter? We'd also like to hear from you if you work in a job that lets you come in 4 days a week. You can always find us online at WNPR.org/Where We Live, also on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining us from the headquarters of NPR in Washington, D.C. is Philip Sofer. He's a former writer for The Atlantic. His story is called Where the 5-Day Work Week Came From. To give us a little bit of history, Philip, welcome to the show.
Hi. Nice to be here.
And also joining us by phone is Maria Konnikova, contributing writer to The New Yorker. Her story is called Why Not a 3-Day Week? We'll get to that in just a moment. Hi, Maria.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. So, Philip, where did this 5-Day Work Week come from anyway?
It started in a New England sawmill in 1908. It was because Jewish workers had to observe the Sabbath on Saturday, and Christian workers were taking Sunday as a day of rest, and the Jewish workers had to work on Sunday to make up for the work that they didn't do on Saturday, which would offend the Christian majority sometimes. So the first instance of a 5-day work week that that I've seen is from accommodating Jewish workers so that they could both take the Sabbath off and not offend the Christian majority.
So essentially, up until this point, the majority of work got done in 6 days a week, maybe even sometimes people working 7 days a week?
Yeah. So the first ever record of the word weekend was from a British publication called Notes and Queries in 1879. A person was supposed to be spending his weekend if he was leaving town on Saturday afternoon and coming back late Sunday. And this happened when the first instance of getting Saturday afternoon off happened because workers were very flaky back in the day. So you would have Sunday off, but a lot of times Sunday was just used for gambling and drinking and gallivanting, and a lot of times employers just could not depend on employees to be at work on Monday, and so the phenomenon of Saint Monday became popular, in which workers would just skip Monday, and so as a compromise, factory owners gave the workers Saturday afternoon off so that they would be sure that they would come in on Monday.
So essentially, because they knew that they'd be using the Sabbath to drink and gallivant, they're just like, you know what, take the Saturday off, make it a 2-day weekend, get yourself ready to work on Monday, right?
Yeah. And from what I've read, it's that this was really the first time where the working class had enough money to enjoy leisure activities. So a lot of sporting events and circuses were scheduled for Monday because Sunday was a prescribed day of rest. So really the work schedule was a mess, and factory owners in particular just could not depend on workers to be at work when they wanted them to, so this compromise made sense for them.
So, Maria, this is interesting, this idea that workers maybe weren't able to be counted on enough to work all the time that they're supposed to work, so we give them this 5-day work week. It's interesting how these things have persisted over time, right? We're still at this point at which a lot of workers are caring more about the clock and the hours that you put in as opposed to the work that gets done. Do you think that the people back in the 1920s would be surprised that we're still operating under these same conditions?
You know, even if they are, I honestly don't think they should be, because you know, we have that rationale built into the way that our country was founded. I mean, when you had Alexis de Tocqueville visiting America, he commented on the fact that they keep earning more and more, and they have more and more, so theoretically they should be working less and really be enjoying the fruits of their labor. But they have this unrelenting ambition, which makes them just keep working longer and longer hours. And so he saw something in kind of this American psyche, this American work ethic, that would prevent people from cutting back even when they could, because their ambition would counteract that call to leisure. And so I think that, you know, today it's not at all surprising. And because we, the American economy, is kind of the ascendant economy right now, we are exporting that sort of worldview to other countries rather than the other way around.
But it's interesting, though, way back in the 1920s, people as different but also very driven as Henry Ford and Keynes were saying, look, we're going to get more productive. The five-day work week is what we've got right now, but over time, it's got to change, because we're going to be a country that makes more stuff more quickly, more efficiently. We're going to have more leisure time as a result. Even Henry Ford, who was, of course, the ultimate capitalist, was saying, you know, this is going to change over time. I just guess, Maria, I don't understand why it hasn't.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think Henry Ford was actually completely right, as was Keynes, in the sense that we would be more productive if we worked less. And Ford wasn't just saying this out of thin air. So when he reduced the work week from 6 days to 5 days in 1926, and at this point he was one of the first major business owners to do so, he said, hey, we did this, and we found out that our workers actually became more productive. We got more productivity in those 5 days than when they were working six. And he said that, you know, in the future this is going to improve, because he understood a very basic psychological principle, which is that we work better when we work efficiently. It's not a matter of hours. It's a matter of other factors, such as control over your time. Do you have time to relax? Do you have time to think, to play, to create? And this is something that a lot of people just don't want to understand, because for them, quantity is still what matters. When you come in, when you leave, that dreaded word that I hate more than anything in the world, FaceTime, how much you're in the office, I think that is so backwards. That is completely the wrong way to measure productivity, and Ford understood that.
And Philip, it's not just, you know, people like Ford and smart people like Maria Konnikova who think that this is absolutely ridiculous. There's been a lot of studies into this. The American Journal of Epidemiology took a look at this, really deciding that people who work these very, very long hours aren't anywhere near as productive as people who work a little bit less.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It also says, your heart rate and blood pressure will go down the less you work. People who work 55 hours per week, after a while, their mental tasks will slow down. And so after a little bit of time of overworking, you're much less productive than somebody who has worked 40 hours for that same amount of time. So it might even be counterproductive to say, hey, work more.
This is interesting. So I'm taking notes here. So workers who work a little less are more productive. Their heart rate and their blood pressure goes down, meaning that we'd save money on healthcare costs. What I'm going to do is take a break real quick, because we've got a lot to talk about and a lot of ideas to consider here. This is Where We Live.
Made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bone. A man that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons and what do you get?
This is Where We Live.
What does your current work week look like?
It's like 5 days a week, 50 hours a week.
It's vacillating. It changes all the time.
During the school year, I'm working from 8 to 4, but I'm also a writer. I'm working all the time.
8:30 to 5. Monday through Friday.
I don't have an average work week.
You know, 40 hours, 5 days a week, yeah.
Do you think people would be more productive with a 4-day work week?
They could. We'd certainly be happier.
I think so.
That depends on the person, I think. It could be, yeah. I can't commit to that.
No, I don't at all. I think they'll work at the same pace.
There's a lot of, like, Wednesday we're not going to do anything because it's Wednesday and it's hump day. So, yeah, I think maybe a 4-day work week would be more focused on those 4 days.
Maybe. I think people would be more productive if they did what they loved. Because if you love what you do, it's not really a job.
Those are some voices gathered by Hallie St. Germain. I'm John Dankosky. Today on the program, we're considering a shorter work week. We're not just doing this because it's a beautiful Friday in the summertime, but we're trying to figure out whether or not it might be more efficient for us to work fewer hours or at least fewer days over the course of a week. Philip Sofer wrote about this for The Atlantic, his article, Where the 5-Day Work Week Came From. Also joining us today by phone is Maria Konnikova, contributing writer to The New Yorker. Her story is called Why Not a 3-Day Week? Let's just go to that quickly, Maria. You know, we've been talking about 4-day weeks, and you considered even a shorter work week. One question is, are we talking about fewer hours over the course of a week? Are we talking about the number of days that you actually, as you said before, have face time at the office?
I think we're talking about the latter, and this isn't actually my idea. I was responding to an idea by Carlos Slim, who said, hey, why don't we do this 3-day work week? I think that workers would be much happier, and they would be much more productive, and we would actually see huge economic gains. And Slim actually didn't say we're going to be working many hours fewer. Instead, he said, okay, when we have this 4-day weekend, this 3-day week, we're going to be working longer every single day, plus you're going to keep working through your 70s. So forget, you know, retirement at 60, at 65. This is something you're going to do until you're almost 80 years old, and yet every single week you're going to have this 4-day weekend. And Slim is not a psychologist, he's not a scientist, but he's a telecom mogul, so he's someone who really can affect change because it's coming from the top. He owns so many businesses, and he really has thousands of workers reporting for him. And I think it's a really, you know, it's an interesting proposition and one that I think could actually work.
You know, one of the things, Maria, that's interesting about that to me is you consider how different countries handle this. Here in the United States, we've said for a long time, we've shifted from a manufacturing economy to a service economy. An awful lot of what we do is either pushing around numbers or coming in and serving people at some time. If we had a 3 or 4 day weekend, wouldn't it completely change or even bolster some of the economy that we have right now? I mean, people would have more jobs, I assume, serving the people who are out having fun on the weekends who aren't in, you know, offices making stuff during a long work week.
I think that's a really good point, and I absolutely think it's true. I think that we underestimate just how many jobs are basically not eliminated, but threatened when people stop doing things. And yes, new jobs are created. If you're always at your desk and if you never leave, then suddenly you need delivery much more than you did before because, well, you're not going to get up and go somewhere. But at the same time, what about the cafes and the restaurants and all the places where you're no longer going? So there is a trade-off, but I do think that when we have more leisure time, we will stimulate the economy. And the other point of that is we're going to be happier. Happier people spend more money. Happier people want to have fun. Happier people want to go out, you know, and enjoy themselves. And people who are depressed and who are overworked and who, you know, just bear grudges and are really mad at their boss and mad at the world, those are the people who are much more likely to just stay in and say, I don't feel like doing anything. I'm just going to turn on the TV.
A lot of our callers are very happy people, most of them at least. Let's go to a few of them. Lori is calling. Hi there, Lori. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the glossing over of that, you know, workers played a big part in making sure there were 5-day work weeks. And there's also a difference in whether or not we're talking about if people are going to work 3 days a week. I mean, Walmart knocked a bunch of people down to 3 days a week. I don't think they're any happier. I mean, this is also about how much money they're taking home at the end of the week. If we're talking about workers who are going to earn the same amount of money and only working 3 days a week, that's a different conversation than people who are suddenly knocked down from, you know, full days, full week's pay down to 3 days' pay. I mean, I think there are two different conversations here.
Well, let's, Lori, while I have you on, let's extend that conversation a little bit. I mean, what do you think one of the things we might need to consider is? Because clearly, if we want workers to be happy, as Maria said, and as productive as possible, we also want people to be able to pay their bills and make sure that they have enough income to feed their family. So as far as you see it, what's the balance here?
Well, I think the part of the balance is that the idea of income inequality over the last 30 years, the fact that, you know, all of the wealth has gone to the top, you know, 10 or 1%, while workers are working longer hours, being more productive, that they're not seeing it in their paychecks. So they're having to work longer hours. They're having to pick up a second job. I mean, we went from, you know, one-income households to two-income households to getting credit card debt to mortgaging our houses, second mortgaging our houses. And so now we're stuck with a situation where people have to work long hours in order to make their ends meet.
Lori, thank you very much for the phone call. I really appreciate it. We're going to get to some more in just a moment. You know, in New Hampshire earlier this month, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush made some controversial remarks about American work hours. Let's listen in.
My aspiration for the country, and I believe we can achieve it, is 4% growth as far as the eye can see, which means we have to be a lot more productive. Workforce participation has to rise from its all-time modern lows. It means that people need to work longer hours and through their productivity gain more income for their families. That's the only way we're going to get out of this rut that we're in.
And again, that's the presidential candidate, Jeb Bush. He later said he wasn't really talking about people needing to work longer hours, but getting more hours for workers who want them. There's been some dispute over what exactly he meant. I want to bring in Dan Hammermesh, who's professor of economics at Royal Holloway University in London, to talk about this a little bit, because we have been talking about, you know, cutting down the work week from 40 hours to 32 hours, or maybe even shorter than that, but we haven't really considered how much people are making during the hours they're working, or whether or not more hours for some workers might be a better thing. Dan, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And what are your thoughts as you listen to Jeb Bush make that statement and what we've been hearing so far in the program? What do you think about this? Because we're talking about maybe a longer weekend, but that doesn't take into account a lot of other factors, like how much we're getting paid for each one of those hours.
I mean, the crucial fact, which one of your callers made just a few minutes ago, is that if we do work fewer hours per week, there is no doubt we will earn less per week, okay? And the question is, do people want to have their hours cut? Well, of course they do. Do they want to have the hours cut and their income cut? I'm not so sure we all do. And that being the case, I have grave doubts about any of this stuff ever happening, certainly not in our lifetime. And I sure doubt that Jeb Bush demand that we work more, that ain't going to happen either.
Okay, so that's probably not going to happen either. But as we think about the ways to get the American worker as happy as possible and as productive as possible, earlier in our conversation, Dan, we were talking about some pros and cons here. For one thing, if we actually can find that workers who work fewer than 40 hours a week are happier and healthier and they're more productive during the time that they're working, shouldn't that signal to American business this might be something that we need to at least consider from an economic standpoint?
I don't think even if they are more productive during those fewer hours they're working, the total amount they produce is going to fall. In fact, there's a lot of evidence now that after about 6 hours per day, the extra bit of productivity does go down. That's been known for almost 100 years. But the total amount produced, and thus the amount we have to eat, the amount we have to buy, and the income we have, is going to go down if we cut total hours per week. There's no question about that. You're not getting something for nothing.
Hmm. I want to go to another phone call here. Let's go to Anne, who's on the line. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy your show. I am calling you on the second of my third day of my weekend. I work 4 10-hour shifts, and I've been doing that for close to 4 years, and I took the job for that reason. I was had a traditional schedule, like a 8:30 to 5 Monday through Friday, and I love it, and I hope I can continue to work the schedule. It just gives me such a good balance in my life, my work life, my home life. As someone on your program was saying, time for creativity, relaxation, I just feel lucky to have it. So wanted to say I'm a proponent of the schedule, and hopefully, you know, more people will have that option.
So, Anne, have you ever been forced, though, with the schedule to maybe contemplate that if you worked a different schedule or you somehow were working a more traditional schedule or hours, that you'd make more money?
Well, I work... So I'm a salary employee, and I work 40 hours. So I'm fortunate. I don't have that issue, you know. But, I mean, it could change, certainly. But right now I'm able to get, you know, what I would get, you know, my salary is the same as if I was working 5 days. So I'm in a good position with that. But
it sounds like it's working out for you. I have to ask you, Anne, is today your day off? I mean, do you have this beautiful day to relax a little bit?
I do. I'm off Thursday, Friday, Saturday every week.
And it gives people time to listen to public radio, too, which I like.
Yes, and I love your show. So thanks so much. And, I feel fortunate to have the schedule.
Thanks very much. Hey, Dan, I'm wondering if you can just take on that issue, though, too. If workers are able to work out schedules with their employers that get all the hours in, get all the work done during 4 days as opposed to 5 days, what do you think the overall economic impact of that is?
I think her schedule is the kind of thing I very much advocate. Look, if we're working still 40 hours but doing it 10 hours per day on 4 days, that saves an awful lot of time commuting. The average person's commuting probably 45 minutes a day. Think of the time saving if you cut out 1 day commute. I think that's wonderful. It means less road construction necessary, less wasted resources on public transportation infrastructure. I think this is great. The more jobs that can be done that way, 4 days, 10 hours, no loss of output, in fact, maybe some extra output. That's the kind of thing that I think makes sense. But cutting hours per week is not going to solve our problems.
Philip Sofer, in your piece in The Atlantic, you detail a few different employers and employees that are working on slightly different schedules. What are some of the things that seem to make sense for you?
So the one that made the most sense for me was... a guy named David Stevens, who's a consultant in Houston, talked about what happened at his company on a LinkedIn post. Basically, they split workers into two cohorts. One of them would work Monday through Thursday. The other would be Tuesday through Friday. And they would come in at 7 and leave at 6. So it was a 10-hour day instead of an 8-hour day. And they would stagger the cohorts each week so that you would have a 2-day weekend followed by a 4-day weekend. And apparently that worked really well. So he was getting his, each person would work 40 hours a week. He would be open from 7 to 6 instead of 8 to 5, and people were much, much happier. So I don't think it's about the number of days you come into the office. It's more about, in terms of productivity, it's just how much work you're doing. And so if you can shave a day off and do the same amount of work, that's a better arrangement for everyone.
We got a tweet from Rich who says, my company moved to a 980 schedule, 80 hours in a 2-week period. Every other Friday is off. Let's go to Anthony Chirolis, who's a youth program coordinator at the Center for Latino Progress. He wanted to tell us a story about how he's been working. And Anthony, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Morning.
So what sort of schedule do you have?
It's a pretty flexible one now. I was going from my engineering schedule over across the river at a company that I won't name today. And it was a standard 40, 40 to 60 if things got hot. The end of last year, we had an emergency and ended up on a team working 60-hour weeks for 6 months. And that just wasn't healthy for anybody on the team, really. So my response to that was to look around for other things to do. And I have had this idea of moving to a nonprofit role. And combining that with a reduced work week from 20 to 30 hours a week, it was something I was very keen on doing, and I found that opportunity this April.
I can only imagine that in your new work world, you are working fewer hours, you're working for a nonprofit, you're probably making a little less money?
Yes, it's not quite an order of magnitude.
But you're making less money. So how are you making that work? Because, you know, here's the balance, right? We talked about that before. Maria says we want to be happy and healthy, but we also got to pay the bills. So talk about finding that balance for yourself, Anthony.
Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about my entire engineering career. I started off in a very standard place, working, having a suburban household, driving a car to work. Very quickly gained 20 pounds, felt kind of sad, and then the treadmill of life. And I, at that point, said, you know, I got to start making changes for my own health and sanity. I was luckily close enough that I started riding my bike to work, did that enough, sold a car. You know, at that point, when you sell a car, if you're making, say $50,000 a year, average cost of a car with upkeep and taxes is $7,000 to $10,000. And that's would have been 20% of my salary. That's a day of my work week.
So you gave yourself a raise and you're bicycling to work. So you're healthier along the way. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Of course, you know, as we've been hearing so far, you've had that flexibility. Not everyone has. I want to go to Peter quickly in Stanford, who has an idea. Hi, Peter. What's on your mind?
Yes. Well, I think I missed a little bit of the discussion. I think we should be focused on wages, just like what your other caller has been saying. Instead of productivity, wages should be focused on. I live in Fairfield County. I do work for a nonprofit. I'm barely keeping up. I just got a second job myself, and it's very difficult to live and save any money in Fairfield County. And most of the jobs are corporate jobs. And they're not they're salary jobs, or maybe lawyers or engineers or doctors. And I'm college educated too, but I work for a nonprofit. And I can just say I make $35,000 a year. You can't live on $35,000 a year in Stanford. It's just so I think we have to focus more on wages. Bernie Sanders talks about people making doing three or four jobs to cobble together just a living. So it's very difficult. You know, we talk about, working less to enjoy more. But I think in this area, it's very expensive to live.
And as you say, people are sometimes working more and enjoying less. And Peter, thank you very much for that. And Maria takes us back to another piece of this, which is, honestly, we hear more and more people who are working two and three different jobs. Sometimes it's because that's the way they want to live, and sometimes it's out of pure necessity. We hear more about a gig economy where people are doing four or five different things and trying to supplement their income in various ways. I think maybe part of the conversation that we're missing a little bit, Maria, is that arguing over the 4 or 5 day work week maybe made sense back in Henry Ford's day when most people showed up at jobs and put on suits and ties. But now people are doing a whole lot of other things. I mean, does the work week even mean anything at all?
Yeah, I would actually like to, propose that we shift the way that we think about it. And rather than measuring based on time, that productivity equals time, we conflate that all the time, and it's simply not true. Productivity is the product. It has nothing to do with time. The same person might get the same thing done in half an hour that it takes someone else 3 hours to do. And I think that's what we need to focus on. And so if we measure the output, and if it ends up that people start working faster when they're more in control of their schedules, when they're more flexible, when sometimes they work from home, sometimes, we really take advantage of the technology that we have to better supplement the way that we work rather than have work always encroaching on our leisure time, which is what happens all too often, I think we're going to find that we see gains in productivity without a loss in income, because I think that that's the other kind of part of the equation that people kind of take for granted, that fewer hours mean less money, because that's the way it is right now, because once again, we equate hours with productivity. But really, we should say, okay, we pay you for the product. So if you can get it done from home in an hour, you're going to get your full wages, even if, for someone else, it took the whole day.
Dan, do I hear you being skeptical down the line?
Oh, I'm very skeptical. Look, if what she just said were correct, then she's implying that today's managers and today's workers have been incredibly stupid. In other words, here there is, according to this argument that's been made, a huge chance, if we just reorganize our lives a bit, to actually work less and make more, which we all want to do. And I think we're smart enough that if that were really possible to work less and make more, we would have already done it.
Well, I'll stop you and say maybe not work less and make more, but work less and make the same. Work less, better, and make the same. And maybe, as I suggested earlier, save down the line on health care costs. Save on some other costs, as you suggested earlier, Dan, like commuting. You know, you're not stuck in traffic that one extra day a week or those extra hours during the week. You feel a little bit better. Your heart rate goes down. Maybe there are some additional incremental costs that are accrued along the way.
I think that would happen, but the huge effect, even working less and a little bit less and making the same, I just think that would have happened already. Look, to me, Americans work too much. We haven't increased our hours in the last 40 years. It's just that other rich countries have cut their hours, and we haven't. And to me, the reason is very simple. We have very short vacations in this country. Nobody's talked about this on the show so far. Most countries, European countries, 4, 5, 6 weeks. The best thing we could do if we want to cut hours and not lose too much productivity, I think would be to have the government mandate a couple of weeks of vacation for everybody. In other words, you must take a vacation. And companies don't appear to want to do that on their own because they're worried the other guy will get a little bit ahead of them. We need longer vacations, that kind of large chunk of time to recuperate and get our senses back.
Well, one thing I will say, and this is great, I want to put this to Maria in just a moment. I mean, mandating a couple of weeks of vacation is something a lot of Americans would go for and might actually increase productivity. But I will say, Dan, that you know the French who traditionally take these very long, luxurious vacations, whenever you meet a French person who's traveling abroad, they talk about how much time they have off. But French law also has cut back the work week at the same time. I mean, the French week used to be 40 hours. Now, by law, it's 35 hours, and they still get all this vacation time, too.
That's true, but there are other countries, and France is not a good example. That country is not doing well. But you look at the Netherlands, you look at Australia, look at Germany, they too have very long vacations. The work weeks are slightly shorter, but not that much. I think getting time off in chunks, the Australians actually have a 10-year sabbatical. You get 4 months of full pay every 10 years, which to me is just mind-boggling. That kind of thing would just make people so much happier. It would cost us a few dollars, but I think people are willing to make that trade-off. But the crucial point here is there is a trade-off. You're not going to get something for nothing.
What about that, Maria? What if all of a sudden we shift the conversation a little bit to just more vacation time? You work the same hours during the week, but you get a chance to have the flexibility of taking a lot more time off during the year to do whatever you want to do.
Well, I am completely on board with all of that and with mandated vacations. And I would even take that a step further and say that mandated vacation should mean mandated vacation, meaning no one from your office will email you during that time unless, you know, hell freezes over and there's an absolute emergency because you are off. So you're not checking your email. You actually get to unwind and unplug. And once again, this is something that comes from the top, that people can't just decide, I'm on vacation, I'm not going to check my email. That would be suicidal. A lot of people would lose their jobs unless this is something that is absolute policy that's mandated from the top. But I will caveat this by saying that I don't think it's an either-or proposition. I think that it's actually not a correct argument when you look at the psychology point of view that if we could actually do this, we'd be doing it already, because we are really fighting against a mentality that has governed our country for centuries. We cannot get over this hump that people should be working harder and that working harder means working better. But every single thing we know from human psychology shows that people do get more productive if they have more control over their schedules, if they do have time to think a little bit. I mean, there's a reason that Google has its flex time and that big companies are realizing that it's valuable to make sure that employees leave for lunch, that they actually take an hour lunch break rather than staying and working. People are refreshed. People start working better. People get more ideas. So I think that if we look at the psychology, we'll see that we can do this and we can be better. But historically, philosophically, even from the economic point of view, in terms of the classical economists, we are just fighting a losing battle. The psychologists are not being heard.
I want to go to a few more phone calls before we run out of time in our conversation about a 4-day work week, perhaps being the thing we move to. Dave is in New Haven. Hi, Dave.
Hi, John. How are you?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you brought this subject up, and to me it really just points to the disconnect and the disparity between the white-collar worker, the corporate worker, and the blue-collar worker and the service industry worker, because I'm a blue-collar worker myself. I work a very hard physical job, and at the end of 7 or 8 hours, I couldn't possibly do anymore. So I would have to cut my hours, which I can't do. And if I'm not here at my job punching the clock, I don't make any money. And meanwhile, the executives and the white-collar workers are making the money that they make, six figures a year, off the backs of the people that need to be at their job. So the question that I think should be asked is not how can we make our corporate executive cushy lives even cushier, how can we make them a little easier and a little better for the people that provide us with this comfortable lifestyle?
Dave, I really appreciate that phone call, and I want to put that to Dan, and maybe that's part of it. We're talking about this as though the American worker is just one thing to a certain extent, and we've got American workers who are doing a lot of different things. Dave's job is such that he couldn't possibly work any more than about 7 or 8 hours a day because of the physical toll it takes on him. There are a lot of other people who are typing away at computers or talking on the radio like me that could probably do it forever, and it's not going to really wear them out too much. Should we be thinking about the types of workers and how many hours they work a week differently?
Sure, we should. And really the neat thing about this is that the rise in hours that people are complaining about, which is not true on average, but it has been true among the better off people. And that's not surprising because, as you say, their jobs are less strenuous per hour. So a lot of the complaining, I think, is coming from people who are among the best off, the most well off people in society. And I don't think we have too much sympathy for them. A guy like Dave is working not as many hours typically as the person on Wall Street. He doesn't want to increase his hours. He can't physically. He'd like more pay. And it's that kind of person who I think we should be worrying about. We're too much focused on the poor $100,000 a year guy working 50 hours a week for whom I'm not overly sympathetic.
I think a lot of us maybe aren't overly sympathetic. A last phone call here, Kathleen and Vernon. Hi, Kathleen. What's on your mind?
Well, I am a self-employed person, and the old saw is still true. Yes, I get to work half days. I get to work whichever 12 hours I want. And that's been true for the last 15 years. I work 10 to 12-hour days, 6 to 7 days a week. I don't get paid vacation. Who would do my job? I employ myself.
So the self-employed person is the last category of person we haven't really considered yet. And Philip Sofer, just as a last thought, that's really one of the big changes here that we've seen over time. There are a lot more people like Kathleen who are working for themselves. They're setting their own hours. And in part, they're doing it because they've got to make a certain amount of money to pay their own bills. No one's telling them to punch the clock, but they're still working within the midst of this 5-day work week. I mean, how does this trend or these trends that you studied, how does it play out for these workers? Or we may have lost Philip, but I'll actually ask Maria that because I'm sure you probably have a take on this. You know a lot of people, Maria, in your line of work who are self-employed.
Yeah, and I think that that's an incredibly important point, and we really need to take it into consideration, because when you're someone like a writer, you have deadlines, and whenever I go on vacation, that means that the week before I go on vacation, I probably work, 60, 70, 80 hours, sometimes even more. I work through the weekends, I basically get my productivity done ahead of time so that then I can relax and have my pieces appear when they need to appear. But the thing is, because I have control over that, I don't mind. I'm not resenting those hours, and I'm not resenting the fact that, okay, I just had a 100-hour week. I'm exhausted. I cannot do this again. I just want to sleep. Because then, you know what I do? I sleep, and then I go on vacation, and everything is fine. And I think that's the other argument here, this sense of control. When workers feel like they can't control their time and that they're not being appreciated for the hours they put in, that's when we start getting problems.
Maria Konnikova is a contributing writer to The New Yorker. Maria, take the rest of the day off. You did great today. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Dan Hammermesh is a professor of economics at Royal Holloway University of London. Thank you so much, Dan, for your expertise. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Anthony Chirolos, who's a youth program coordinator at the Center for Latino Progress. Thanks so much for joining us, Anthony, and I'm glad that you got this job that's fitting your lifestyle.
Oh, it's excellent. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about a different sort of work week, the work week that students put in. Maybe that should be 4 days a week. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Monday is Labor Day. I hope you're able to enjoy the day. We're going to be taking the day off as well, so we're bringing you a documentary special from Reveal. It's the investigative series of documentaries from PRX. I hope you can join us for that. We're going to be moving our conversation today to education. We've been talking about the 4-day work week for adults. Now, what about the 4-day work week for students? Madeline Cummings is a reporter for the Edmonton Journal in Alberta. Her piece, Adults Love the 4-Day School Week, Is It Good for the Kids?, was written for Slate in partnership with the Teachers Project at Columbia University. Madeline, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Where did the idea of a 4-day school week come from?
Well, there was a school district in South Dakota in the 30s that used this system, and they had school from Monday to Thursday, and then they did extracurriculars on Friday. But the idea really became popular after the oil crisis in the 1970s, and schools thought that they could save a little bit of money by not having school on Friday. So what they did was they made, they added an hour of instruction to each other day and then took that day off so that they could save money in heating the building and paying cafeteria workers and such on that day.
Were they not paying teachers for that day, or were the teachers doing something else during that extra day off?
Teachers usually weren't doing anything, but they were working longer hours on the other days, so their salaries didn't change.
Mm. Where do we see 4-day school weeks actually happening around the United States?
It happens in a lot of states. Tends to be in the Midwest, and in Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, and Oregon, the number of schools using the schedule is actually going up. So it's becoming a lot more popular in these states. In Idaho, for example, 42 of their 115 school districts are using the 4-day week, and that's doubled in the past 4 years.
So in Idaho, I mean, what do we see as the impact? Are there benefits being shown for students and the actual education they're getting?
Yeah, there are pros and cons. Some teachers say that the longer school day on Monday to Thursday allows them to teach more deeply, and it gives kids a day to rest on Friday and spend more time with their families, which is great. They say that staff absences go down because staff can book doctor's appointments and dentist appointments on the Friday, and kids tend to do that as well. They say it helps with teacher recruitment because teachers really like having that extra day off. Some of the cons, it can tire out the kids from Monday to Thursday if they're working really long days without adequate rest. And some school districts have found that if kids don't have anything to do on the Friday, if they're just sitting at home, they might forget what they've learned during the week. So it can kind of lead to the type of learning loss that we normally see during the summer, especially for kids from disadvantaged communities where there aren't extracurricular activities that are affordable to do on that Friday. So a lot of teachers in Idaho, for example, in one particular district, were really concerned about that. And kids were, in some instances, wandering back to school on the Friday because they didn't know where else to go.
Hmm. Well, and boy, that's so interesting, too, because this rubs up against a lot of other trends that we've seen in American education that have to do with putting kids in school for longer hours 5 days a week. And also, the school is a kind of a community hub where extracurricular activities go all day, where students are spending time there even when they're not traditionally in class. So it almost seems, to a certain extent, Madeline, like these two trends are in opposition. One is, you know, we're going to cut down the school week. We're going to make it 4 days and, you know, spend that long weekend and hopefully don't lose too much learning along the way. The other trend is keep them in school all the time, keep them there long hours for extracurriculars afterward, and make it kind of a place where students, parents, and teachers are always gathering. These seem to be a bit at odds.
Yeah, you're right. Another benefit that teachers were saying with the 4-day week is that on Fridays they can have the chance to do professional development. And that can really help. They really like that. But it also means they are going to school on Friday, and they're not really getting that day off. And kids will often show up for tutoring on Friday. So it seems to me like people are actually spending more time in school on this schedule.
How does this trend of 4-day school weeks, though, in some of these locations, how does this rub up against another one of the questions? You mentioned it earlier, the long summer vacation. That's something we've talked about for years, the notion that we still have an agricultural calendar that allows kids to take 3 months off in the middle of the summertime. Many people say it's great. Other educators say kids are, you know, losing all the stuff that they learned over the course of the year. Does the 4-day work week in any way jibe or rub up against this idea of the summer vacation?
Yeah, you know, I didn't see that schools had changed their approach to summer vacation. I think they were keeping the same holidays. All that they changed were the hours of each school day. So it still allowed them to have this long summer vacation, but they worked longer hours during the week.
Something we talked about in our conversation around workers and their hours is just health and happiness. I mean, obviously, we want kids to be educated during the time that they're there. And we even talked just a moment ago about how teachers maybe can be healthier during a 4-day school week because they're able to schedule their doctor's appointments, have a little less stress. What do we know about the overall impact on the happiness of kids who go 4 days a week?
Well, the problem is we don't know a whole lot. We have done very little work studying the 4-day school week. So districts aren't really basing their decision to move to the 4-day school week on quantitative evidence. If it works for their community, they tend to stick with it and parents tend to like it. But some education experts are really worried that we're not basing this on anything really. We don't really know if it impacts test scores in a positive way. We don't know if kids are less stressed. Some kids that I interviewed said that they really loved the 4-day school week. Others said that it really tired them out and they ended up switching to schools that had more traditional school weeks.
We just got a tweet about the boarding school model where a lot of students get Wednesdays only a half day off and you play sports and other things. Is there any benefit to having Wednesday be the day that students take off as opposed to Fridays or Mondays?
Yeah, you know what? There is a school district in Oregon, I believe, at least one, that instead of designating Friday as a day off, they chose Wednesday, and they did that so that kids would have Wednesday to do homework that was assigned on Tuesday, and then have that due on Thursday. And that way, they were kind of forced to spend their day off working on school and not sitting at home doing nothing.
Madeline, I guess I just have to ask you as a last thing. We have about a minute left. You report for the Edmonton Journal. Do you live in Edmonton, Alberta?
I do, yes. I just moved to the city about a month and a half ago.
So what is your sense, whether or not it has to do with education and how much we work, or even our earlier conversation about work at a job, do you think that Americans and Canadians have very different ideas about some of these things, or are we all pretty much working at that same American pace?
Well, I'm still working a 9-to-5 job 5 days a week, but I think there are way fewer schools here in Canada experimenting with anything like the 4-day week. So I think sometimes Americans are a little more willing to innovate, if I could say that.
A little bit more willing to innovate. If I lived in Edmonton, I would make sure I had a long vacation so I could get to Florida at least for a couple weeks in the wintertime, right? Don't you
think?
Well,
I have yet to experience the winter, but yes, I'm told it's quite brutal.
Madeline Cummings is a reporter for the Edmonton Journal. Her piece, Adults Love the 4-Day School Week, Is It Good for the Kids?, was written for Slate in partnership with a teacher project at Columbia University. Madeline, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
You can continue our conversation online. We'd love to hear about your work week. It's WNPR.org/where we live. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at Where We Live. Our program is produced by Lydia Brown, Tucker Ives, Betsy Kaplan, and Josh Naleo. Our technical producer is Kion Wolf. The digital editor is Heather Brandon. The executive producer of Where We Live is Katie Talarski. Thanks to our interns, Alex Dubin, Deborah Timms, and Jules Lefebvre. You can continue our conversation as always. It's WNPR.org/where we live. And we'll see you again on Monday, Where We Live.